Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This is show number 13. We hope everyone's had a great week. This week's show is John Wilkerning. He's our special guest. He's a fellow podcaster and pinhole photographer, and he's going to talk to us about some of his projects and a recent trip that he just got back from. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Corey, and I hope you've had a great week. This is show number 13. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Corey. Yes. Yeah. Lovely to hear your sweet voice from all the way across that bit of water.
The pond.
The pond.
Yeah. So, Andrew, we have a special guest. Do you want to let everybody know who it is?
Yes. We're very, very pleased to welcome John Wilkerning. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well.
And we're really pleased that you could join us, because I've been a fan of your work for many, many years, and we finally got to speak just before you went off on your recent road trip. So we look forward to hearing a little bit about that in a while.
Yeah.
Why don't you take a few moments to just introduce yourself and maybe just tell us how you got to this point. So a bit of your life story, you know, in 2 minutes.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. And how you got into pinhole photography.
I think the story of how I got into pinhole photography is probably the funniest part. So there's a photographer by the name of Ian Ruther who converted a big giant food truck into a wet plate camera. And he has a video called Silver and Light. And I got obsessed about watching that. But the problem was I couldn't afford a food truck and make 60-inch wet plates. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how I wanted to do what he was doing, but I couldn't figure it out. Then he puts out a video of how he was shooting the wet plate with a plastic Holga camera. So it's like, perfect. I could buy a Holga, learn how to do wet plates. In my excitement, I ended up buying a pinhole Holga off Amazon, and you know, which is obviously terrible to shoot wet plate on. So I got really mad at myself, put it in the corner for about like a month, and then I was like, well, if I bought a camera, I might as well use it. So I decided to use it, and I got fascinated with the results of pinhole.
Cool.
And so that's how I ended up with pinhole photography.
Hey, and were you shooting any film before you got to that point? I mean, you mentioned your wet plate stuff. How did you get into wet plate photography?
I haven't yet got into wet plate. I wanted to get into wet plate. I'll probably get into wet plate at some point here in the future because I'm fascinated by that process.
We have just about 4 miles from where I live. There's a store called Wet Plate Supplies, and they have a web presence. And when I say a store, it's more like a 2 or 3 lock-up garages. And when you walk in, it's like the Harry Potter room of requirements. It's just full of wet plate camera-y magic.
Wonderfulness.
Wonderfulness. And he'll make you, he'll sort your chemicals out for you. Oh, we just lost John. You want to try and get him back? So Wet Plate Supplies are just really good. So I'll give those guys a bit of a shout out. And they can, if you've got any kind of desire to shoot alternative processes to make alternative images, then Wet Plate Supplies. Hi, John.
Hey.
We were just talking about Wet Plate Supplies, and they're really good. So, we'll crack on while we've got you. So you've not got into it yet. So you get your Holga and you do your wet plate, but that's for the future.
Yeah. And it was one of those where I decided, you know, I started getting fascinated with pinhole, basically treated it like a long exposure photography. So I was doing your classic shooting at shooting traffic, shooting buildings, and I sort of reached a point where I wasn't happy with the work I was creating. I felt there was something more, and I couldn't really figure out where to go with the pinhole photography. And that's when I found Ernst Haas's work, particularly his motion work that he shot. He shot a series with bullfighters in Spain. That basically that blew my mind, as they say. And so then I took the step of trying to reproduce his style of blurry work with a pinhole camera.
Without bullfighters.
Yeah, without bullfighters. So what that meant was that I had to figure out how to shorten the exposure in a pinhole camera down to a second to less than a second to get
Gotcha.
that same sort of motion. And when you're shooting at aperture 192, that could be a little challenging, but
Because are you looking, you're looking to hold that pinhole camera fairly steady, because you still want to get a, you still want to get some kind of defined image, I guess.
there's a sweet sort of middle when you're holding it. There's plenty of frames on my that I've scanned in sitting on my computer that don't work because they're not blurry enough, if you get what
Right.
I'm saying. And then
Yeah.
there's frames that are too blurry, where you lose the image completely. And so the goal, there's a sweet middle where things just work, and it becomes a lot of trial and error to figure that out.
Sure.
That's why we've got you on here, so we don't have to do all the
Yeah.
trial and error. You can just tell us. Without giving away all your secrets, of course.
There are no secrets in my. I don't believe in secrets when it comes to photography.
We all have the same camera and the same film, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those where I found that it required either you have to get the subjects as they're moving, or you have to be moving. And it becomes one of those things where, depending on where the person is moving or how you're moving in relation to the person, changes
Sure.
the effect of the blur.
Because I saw your fairly recent work, which was published in Let's Explore magazine, and they were all street shots, weren't they? Handheld pinhole street shots.
But
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that series and
because
how you did those?
that's when I started following you, John, was that was around that time. And I thought it was interesting how you ended up going from doing pinhole to doing the project, with 35 millimeter and still having the same effect, like you're still getting what you wanted. So.
It became one of those things where, to give an ex good example of the font, like what attracted me to this project, is that cover shot on Let's Explore. It very much looks like an American flag. But when I shot it, all I saw was the red and white shirt. I didn't realize that there was a blue background behind the person. And I had no idea that that flag sort of option, if you, or that it would basically, these ingredients would turn into what appears to be a flag. And so that became the real thing that attracted me to the series, is because I started combining ingredients and making things that were more than the sum of their parts. But I also realized as that during Tiny Plastic Box, which was the 365 I did with these street shots, was that I'm effectively playing with contrast within the image. And pinhole as a style and like a medium is a very low contrast type style. The lack of lens sort of flattens everything, plus the lack of the continuous depth of field,
sure.
Let's put it that way, also flattens the image. So in a sense, I'm playing with an element with the least beneficial technique for that element, if you want to say.
Right.
And, you know, it, as the quote on the website says, I'm doing it the long, hard, and stupid way. And so the reason I started going using 35 millimeter was basically saying, or like not 35, but like a regular lens 35 millimeter is basically saying, I have this style that's playing with contrast. Let's use an instrument that helps me out with that rather than fighting the instrument.
Sure.
I'm just looking at some of your images on your site, John, under the title Winter Light.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very struck by the use of contrast here. And just you're using it in an almost sort of Rembrandt masterly way, aren't you? It's the contrast between the light and the dark that's really making pretty much all these images work. And you've got people in the streets just walking into these pools of light, and you know that must be just breaking down between the skyscrapers. It's just wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's definitely, I learned it. It's what, during the Tiny Plastic Boss, the beauty of that project is that I had to shoot so many frames to get enough work for a 365.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I sort of lost track, but I want to say I shot somewhere in the range of 150 rolls of medium format.
Wow.
For that.
Because I understand that, because I do a little thing, a little project I'm working on too, and I don't even dedicate whole rolls to it. I just will kind of be somewhere where there's people, and I'll just do a couple frames, you know what I mean? And like half of those make it, half of them don't. And that's only a frame or two. So I couldn't even imagine, you know, doing whole rolls of trying to, you know, walk around and doing a whole roll and then only be able to get one or none or two off of a roll. That's got to be.
So, John, yeah. What camera are you using for your Tiny Plastic Box series?
So I started off using the Holga pinhole camera.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I had ended up, the shutter ended up breaking because
it's a Holga.
Yeah, because it's a Holga, and I used it for 2 years and probably put, I don't know, 300, 400 rolls of film through it.
Wow.
So it, you know, it was bound to break. And I bought another Holga pinhole off of a friend who wanted it, who wanted to sell it. Ended up breaking that one too for the same issue.
Holga slayer.
It was, yeah. And it was sort of at that point where I was starting to play with the lens 35 millimeter. And so then I finished the project using the Canonet QL17 that I have.
Yeah.
So that's what I finished the project out.
Cool.
But in terms of pinhole cameras, I also have a Nopo panoramic 35 out of Spain.
Yep.
And I also built a pinhole camera for a 4x5 camera.
Cool.
Everybody's doing that. So that's my next project, I think.
Yeah, no, it's perfect for the format, and you know, those 4x5 negatives are
nice.
And yeah, nice would be an understatement.
I like the 4x5 negatives too. I have to agree with you. So you just did a recently, John, you just got back from a trip where you did a lot of driving, and I know, did you shoot any pinhole while you were out on that trip?
Yeah, so I took the Nopo with me on that trip, and I shot both black and white and color negative.
Cool.
In that,
were you shooting XR or what were you shooting for film wise? Stock
black and white was Delta 400, because that's what I bought 100 feet of that prior to my trip.
Cool.
And then the color film I believe was the Lomo 400.
So this is 35 millimeter you're shooting then.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I developed all that stuff. And I think I have a few workable frames from that. My goal going into this trip was to sort of create a book or a zine out of the project. So
awesome.
I have about a third of the film developed.
I think I saw did you post all your films you had to develop? Did I see a photograph of that somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah. It was 35 rolls of film between most of it was 35 millimeter. A few of it was medium format. I have, one of those, I think it's pronounced Dewa, yep. 6x17 back film backs for the 4x5.
I have cool. one of those.
Yeah, so I could shoot like giant panoramics and that.
You were using that on your Intrepid, weren't you? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Did that go well? And is that the first time you'd used that, or have you been using that a while?
It's the first time I really shot a lot with the Intrepid with it. I had a Crown Graphic that I shot quite a bit with that back on.
Yeah.
It's the first with the Intrepid, but the result I really like a few of the frames I got from that.
That 6x17 on the large format back is just wonderful. Have you tried it with the pinhole? Because you get a pinhole. Did you get your pinhole with your Intrepid?
No, I bought my Intrepid sort of second in the used markets, let's put it that way. I'm planning on picking up or making a pinhole.
Yeah, well, it's easy enough to make, isn't it? But I got one with my Intrepid when I backed it on Kickstarter.
Yeah. What's that?
Just saying.
Do you know what the aperture is on that pinhole?
Yeah, probably.
Somewhere.
I can't remember.
He only knows those kind of questions on Friday. Where you have to ask catch him on Friday and he can give you numbers.
If you'd have given me prior notice, I would have dug it out. In order to get it out now, I've got to root around under my desk and I'm going to make a load of noise, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, no worries. The reason I ask is I found that with the shooting several different pinholes, to shoot the sort of the handheld, the blurry stuff, I tend to want a smaller pinhole, even though it makes it harder to shoot that style with.
Yep.
The smaller the pinhole, the tends you get the sharper the image.
Yeah, sure.
And if you end up with a pinhole that's a little too large, you get a more blurry, smeary sort of image, which then in a weird way requires you to shoot faster to get it where you want. So I tend to, the difference between, I think the Nopo has in the 130 range versus the Holga's 190. And there's a definite difference in feel between those two when I shoot the same style.
Yeah, the reality is those subtle 6x6s. Are they F200? Is that right, Corey?
No, they're only the 6x6s are 137.
Oh, are they? Where am I getting it? Oh, that's on the 612 is 200, maybe.
Yeah, and then the 6x6F is 160.
Right. I've got a feeling, and I might just be making this up, that my pinhole that came with the Intrepid was F200, but
okay.
Yeah, not sure.
Yeah, no.
But cool. I've only used it a few times, but it's lovely. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So your trip, tell us where you went and how you did it. Were you camping, or were you staying in 5-star hotels, or what were you doing?
So my in-laws love going out west, and so they have a 12-passenger van, and a couple of my brother and sister-in-laws and their kids came, and I took myself and my son on the trip. So it was like 10 people in a 12-passenger van pulling a pop-up camper. Huh. And my son and I stayed in tents for 3 weeks.
Sweet.
And yeah, we basically drove, well, I'm in Pennsylvania near Philadelphia, and we drove to Colorado, basically across country to Colorado, and then went to Dinosaur National Park, which is in the top corner of Colorado.
Yeah.
And then we did the down to Moab to see arches. Then
did you get to Delicate Arch? Did you see Delicate Arch?
No, unfortunately, that was one of the, if you want to say the downsides of the trip, was that we saw a lot, but that meant we didn't spend a lot of time in each individual park.
Yeah, to get to Delicate Arch, you need to be there early and get there before the 200 Japanese tourists turn up. Yeah,
seriously. That many?
Yeah, seriously. Within a few hours of the park opening, it's just inundated with. They're not all Japanese, you know. Probably some American. Yeah. Probably some Americans there as well.
Yeah. So. I was only able to spend like 2 hours, 2-3 hours at Arches. But then we went, because then we're driving down to Zion National Park, Bryce, Grand Canyon. We also did some, while we're staying at Flagstaff to see Grand Canyon, we also saw an old volcano lava field and a couple of pueblos. Then went to Petrified Forest.
I've always wanted to go there.
Petrified Forest was insane. Because the entire time you're looking at trees that are now rocks.
Yeah, sure.
Were you scared?
Scared?
Petrified even, John. Did you say you were petrified?
Oh, forgive me.
No, I see what you did there.
I know, I'm so subtle.
Yeah.
I know. And then we went up to Mesa Verde up in Colorado again. So we made this sort of loop all based out of, you know, and then drove all the way back.
So you're in Flagstaff. You were quite close to that stretch of Route 66, that 100-mile stretch, which is kind of still between, where does it go from Williams to somewhere? So it's a stretch, Route 66. Did you do that?
We didn't. We drove on Route 66, but it wasn't like a thing that we went out to do.
Right.
It sort of accidentally happened.
Yeah. Oh well. At least you now, did go.
You because you were with like your extended family and thousands of people? Did that enable you to do the photography you wanted to, John? Because I mean, some of this stuff is really best by yourself, isn't it? You know, when you've got like granny and your and your aunt and uncle and in-laws all kind of saying, what are you doing?
And Nana.
Yeah, what are you doing? What where are you going now? How did that all work?
that in some ways the trip was awesome because I got to see everything, but it also was very hard photographically because, you know, I couldn't get up at sunrise and go in these parks, you know?
Yep.
Everyone had to get up, and like so, I was end up shooting in between roughly 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So basically, worst time light wise,
right?
And also the busiest time park wise.
Sure. So you know what you ended up doing? You ended up doing what I call take what I can get. whenever we go on a trip and the kids are with us, I'm just like, I'm not planning on doing anything like this. If I have a second, I can do it. I'll do it. If not, you know, it feels like it's too much of work to try and go against the grain to make something happen. So just whatever happens.
Yeah,
happens,
you have to take the equipment with you, which suits the situation. So
yeah.
You know, we're off to North Wales in a few weeks' time, just me and my wife. And I've been thinking about it, and I'm taking a lightweight 4x5 camera, I think, with me, and probably my 6x12 pinhole. And if I ever get it back from
Neil Piper.
Are you listening?
You better be Neil. No,
yeah. my 6x6F. No, he's not had it too long. It's just, I would quite like it back before the middle of July, Neil, if that's all right, mate.
Is North Wales a bring your rain gear situation, or is that a...
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. We're camping. We have a pop-up camper, John, and for want of better words, but it's kind of like a pop-up camper, and we're staying there by a lake called Lake Barla. And I've got a great book called Photographing Wales, North Wales. And a friend I was staying with at the weekend put me onto it. And she's just got one because she's touring around Scotland. I'll tell you about that perhaps after the break. But I've got this book on photographing Wales, and it gives you a map. It gives you what time is the best time of the day to go, depending on what your lighting is like, viewpoints.
Cool.
Really good. Yep.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Hi, guys. This is Neil. It's a little bit overdue, but I just wanted to give a big thank you to Andrew, who was good enough to lend me both his Reality So Subtle 6x6F and his Zero Image 2000 6x6 camera, just so that I could have a little play with them. I'm thinking of buying one myself. I wanted to know which one would be better for me personally. I must say at the moment I'm having great fun with the Reality 6x6F. It's a great little camera. But the Zero is a good one as well. So, just again, thanks Andrew. It's real nice of you to drive out and meet me. Lend me them both. Thanks very much. I'll get them back to you soon. Cheers.
So, Andrew, last week we had Mike Gutterman from the Negative Positive Podcast.
Mike Gutterman from Negative Positives. Oh, that's a terrible impression.
He sent us a voicemail. We played it last week, but he was asking about good starter pinhole cameras. And I sold Mike a wide-angle pinhole camera.
I know. Sold it to me. What are you doing selling it to Mike Gutterman for? Lovely chap that he is.
I wanted one.
Well, I really want one. I thought we were friends.
Well, you know, he really wanted one.
I know. I'm sure he'll produce some lovely results with it.
I hope he likes it.
If anybody out there has a spare Holger YWP, what's it called? WP something?
WPC.
WPC.
Wide angle pinhole camera.
Yeah. If they have one, just hit me up somehow, you know, online, send me a message.
Andrew's looking for one. But yeah. Mike, so what's some good beginner pinhole cameras? I know that I use the Reality So Subtle 6x6s. I guess it just kind of depends on what you're looking to do. If you're looking for something that you can put in your pocket and carry everywhere, I think the Realities work really good because all the shutter mechanisms are kind of hidden, and you can rewind the frames back and forth. What do you think?
I'm always worried with the Reality, and I don't think I need to be really. That I'm going to end up photographing my finger, but I don't think I ever have. Do you just open that little slidey shutter, or do you put your finger over the hole as it's kind of opening and then take your finger away?
What I do is I come over the top of it and like pinch my finger. So I take my finger and put it over the little recessed area there.
Yep.
Then I kind of squeeze it with my thumb on the back. Mm-hmm. And then I'll open the shutter with my finger on top of it. Then I just take my hand away and make my exposure. Yeah. And then I do that same pinch when I close it. I pinch it and then I close it. Then I'll close the shutter.
So I'm remember we're giving advice for, you know, the beginner.
Beginner, yeah.
And I think the reality so subtle is a really good choice. However, the other one I would recommend is, and in fact, you don't have to pay anything for this, because if you have a 3D printer, you can go to Todd Schlemmer's website.
Yes, you can.
And download the files for one of his Terrapin pinhole cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one I was using recently that I'd borrowed as part of the GitSwap program was, I think it was a GitSwap Oscar. We have the dogs back. We haven't had the dogs on the show for weeks. Is that your dog, John?
No, that's my kid.
Andrew.
Is he just making dog noises?
he took apart the couch and just literally jumping on back and forth on the couch.
Right. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
I'm moving swiftly on. Damn boy, quiet.
Back to the GitSwap program.
Throw your child a dog treat or something to keep him quiet.
Sometimes that works.
Oh, dear. I'm always putting my foot in it. So the Terrapin pinhole camera, this one I was using, had a kind of a circular wheel on the front, and you stuck your finger in a little finger-size indent, and you just moved it round, and it automatically uncovered the pinhole. And there wasn't really any way that you could stick your great big fingers in front of the pinhole. So that worked really well. And like the reality, you can wind the film backwards and forwards. You know, if you've missed a frame, or you want to go back and do a double exposure onto something that you shot earlier.
Yeah.
So that's really good. My first pinhole camera was a Zero 2000, which is a lovely camera.
That's a good starter camera too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. With the
no, absolutely.
I shoot it too.
And if you fit the cable, if you have the cable release attachment on it, then you've got no way of getting your fingers over the lens,
right?
Over the pinhole. Sure. So there would be my two recommendations. I'm sure there are lots of others out there, you know?
I think that's good. Yeah.
What about you, John? What do you think would be, from your vast experience, what would be a good pinhole camera to start with?
If you could find them, the Holga pinhole cameras.
Yeah.
They're, you know, with the Holga factory shutting down, they're now antiques.
A commodity, if you will.
But aren't Holger, didn't they reopen production somewhere?
They reopened production of the standard lensed Holger. I'm not sure if they're still making the pinhole ones.
I think Loma bought them, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Randy at Holger Mods, I think he might have some pinhole Holgers for sale there. I'm not sure. I know he can modify it, but he might have some for sale.
Yeah.
He made it.
Those are super easy and get you in the door fairly cheap. The other company to look at is Nopo, N-O-P-O.
Mm-hmm.
They have some gorgeous wood pinholes. I have the panoramic 35mm one.
What kind of aspect ratio is that, John? What is that in terms of 2:1, 3:1?
I believe it's 2:1,
mm-hmm.
I want to say. I don't know right off the top of my head.
So like a 6x12 on medium format.
Yeah, it shoots very similar frame to the X-Pan that's internet famous at this point.
Yeah.
Just cheaper.
Yeah, significantly cheaper. But honestly, any of the pinhole is such a easy format to get into that it sort of comes a question of what's your price point, how much do you want to end? Do you want just basic pinhole camera like a Terrapin, like a Holga, or do you want more of the art pinhole camera? And that's sort of, to me, the question you just need to answer with them. But
yeah,
a pinhole camera is a box with a tiny hole in the front of it. You can't get too complicated.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about any frames per second or.
Of course, the elephant in the room is, and everyone's shouting at their computers or their phones now, don't buy one, just make one. It's really cheap, you know. Well, so you can get your either homemade pinhole or your, or you can buy one from someone like James Gurin and eat a Chinese takeaway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over in the UK, we have Chinese takeaways in aluminium foil containers with cardboard lids on. And, you know, you could use that. I think that's what some folks were using over on World Pinhole Day, I saw.
Well, if that works better, if you can't develop, making a camera is great, but if you can't develop your paper negatives, then it's kind of pointless, you know? So you kind of got to think about doing a little roll film, 35 millimeter matchbox.
Yeah.
That would probably be the best way because you can
just
send the 35 cartridge off, you know?
And to be honest, we are talking, Mike Gutterman did say beginner's pinhole camera. So if it means you've then got to go and mess around with paper negatives, then maybe the beginner would be put off. I don't know
either, but
yeah,
so there you go. That's about the best we can do, I think, is
so yeah. Mike Gutterman's got his pinhole Holger camera now, so we look forward to seeing some great shots from the Gutterman cave.
I even sent him a roll of film with the camera I sold him, so he should be good to go.
Did you?
Yep.
You're a generous chap.
I try. It's hard. You know, it's really hard, but you have to just really push on and do the best you can.
So what have you been up to this week then? I bet you haven't driven 6,700 miles, have you?
6,500 miles, actually. No, I've been kind of shooting some color stuff, messing around with it. Having some light leaks with my 4x5 camera that I've been shooting the infrared with, and I've kind of stopped until I can figure out where my light leaks are coming from, because I've now gone through, I don't know, 10 sheets of 4x5 rolly infrared film. So I gotta keep tagging along with that thing. I've been messing around with the color stuff, but I think I'm going to just go back to doing black and white, because I don't really get happy whenever I develop any color stuff. It just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't really get me that excited. But the black and white, I just really seem to like. So I think I'm going to just kind of head back to doing that. So
Most of my output is black and white, mainly because it gives me the creative option of going in the dark room and making prints.
Sure.
Do you do any printing, John?
Not yet. I have a enlarger, and it's just a matter of setting up the dark room in the basement, which is on the to-do list to be finished by the end of the year. Because I really want to get, you know, I mean, if I'm shooting film, you might as well print in the dark room. You've already done the hard part.
Yeah. And, you know, and the good thing about it is that even if you don't have an enlarger yet and you're shooting 6x9 and 6x6, and 4x5, you can still make really cool prints with just doing contact prints with an old lamp and a 7.5 watt light bulb. That's the setup that I use. I don't have an enlarger. I just do contacts.
And you've made some lovely little 6x6 contact prints, haven't you? Because I think you sent me some.
Mm-hmm. I really like doing little 6x6s. I get cut a little mat for them, you know, and I think they're pretty cool. And and 4x5 and 5x7. I mean, whatever size camera you want to make, if you're shooting 8x10 negatives, you can contact print those, and you don't even. It's really easy to do contact printing. Don't get.
And it's the old time. It's the old timey way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't get caught up with what you think of seeing a dark room and it has an enlarger and it's all this fancy equipment. You don't have to have all that. You really don't.
No.
To have fun. I mean, just to have fun to do it. You know. I mean, it's. And if you're developing at home, all you have to do is change your developer for paper developer. That's it. Stop, bath, and your fixer are the same. You know.
Is for doing contact prints? You said 7.5 watt light bulb. Is what I mean. Does that change if you're doing larger contact prints?
No, not that I've seen anyways. I mean, you may need to raise and lower your light depending on how much light you want to have dispersed around. You know what I mean?
I think you need to do some, what you need to do in your setup is try and eliminate all the variables, John. So, you know, if you're getting sort of fairly consistent negatives, then that's taking one variable out of it. But really, you know, I don't know what Corey does, but with traditional printing, you produce a test strip. So you turn your 7.5 watt bulb on for, I don't know what kind of exposure times you're talking about. Let's say a second. You cover a portion of that paper up, and then you expose for another second. So that's now had 2 seconds. Cover that bit up, and then keep going through. Mm-hmm. Develop your paper, and then you look for your, you know, the exposure time that you think is going to give you what you want.
Yeah, I do. I do test strips when I do my contacts. It's fun when you're doing those little 6x6 negatives because you're doing like little test strips of like the width of like a pencil line. Then I'm like sitting in there with them, using Q-tips to burn and dodge them in. You know what I mean? Like trying to get it done.
Well, just... You know, I was then going to joke and say, presumably you're not doing any dodging and burning, but you are. Are you?
With a tiny little Q-tip. You know that picture? I posted a picture a long time ago of a merry-go-round. That picture, when I did that picture, I couldn't get it right. So what I ended up doing was making one, letting it dry, taking a little X-Acto knife, and I literally cut out the area that I wanted to burn in, which is basically mm-hmm. just the highlights of the merry-go-round. Yep. I took and I cut that out.
Made a mess.
Then I made my exposure, and I came back and set it over top of it and did another second or two and just moved it and just burnt that little area of the merry-go-round
in. The trick is to keep the mask a little bit away from the your final print, so
a couple inches, so you have nice soft lines, not those hard lines.
You get a nice penumbra.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ask is I've turned a hydroponic grow tent into a giant camera.
Mm. Have you stopped? Well, you know, growing weed is legal in lots of places now in America. Have you just given up on that?
Does your dog keep eating it? Is that the problem? The dog keeps eating it? No.
I'm not in one of those spots. Yeah. You can pick them up off eBay fairly cheap.
Whatever you say, John. Whatever you say.
But I've shot 20 by 24 inch paper negatives before.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
So, you know, trying to figure out the... If I could shoot, you know, because pinhole, you don't have a restriction how large you could shoot theoretically.
With a paper negative, where your subsequent task is then to invert the paper negative and put it into contact with the emulsion of your other print, I would think you could get away with a more powerful light bulb because, you know, you've got the back of the paper negative to get the light through, so. You can probably go 25 watts or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I've only been using negatives. I haven't done any negative to paper negative mm-hmm. to, you know, regular paper contact printing. So.
And when you're doing paper negatives, if you've got areas that you need to control, you can take a China graph pencil, and you can shade the back of the paper negative, so you're creating an area of extra density, you know, to hold back areas.
Oh, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, awesome. when you're an old git like me and you've been around for a while, you know, you pick these things up.
Cool. Well, let's take a break real fast, and we'll be back in just a second.
Okay.
So, Andrew. You had a Polaroid induced weekend trip this last weekend, didn't you?
I did, yes. Go on, mate. Yeah, sorry.
No, I was going to say just what were some of the details behind that?
Well, I used to be a really big, enthusiastic Polaroid shooter, and now I still love it, but I don't shoot as much. But I've got some really good friends online, not just in the Polaroid world, but right across the film world. And this is, I just find meeting people that are, you know, seeing people, and just fantastic. And a dear friend of mine, Ruth, who's online is R00_R00_S, Ruru. Ruth, I've known Ruth a few years now, and Julie and I went to stay with her. She lives up in Sheffield, which is in an area of England called the Peak District, P-E-A-K. And that's really beautiful. And Sheffield is a great city. And she lives there with her husband and two children.
Cool.
And we went up for the weekend. We got chatting online, and she said, come and stay with us. So we did. And I took my 6x12 pinhole camera, and I took my my Nikon film camera, and I took a Polaroid box camera with me that shoots the impossible style square film.
Cool.
So when we arrived, there was a German lady there who I'd been interacting with online for a long time, Ina Echternach, Echternach. And Ina is online as I am Ina, either one word or with an underscore there. And Ina is just a fantastic, very creative Polaroid photographer, mainly landscapes. She does lots of triptych of trees and collage work. And it was really good to meet her.
Ina the one that does the... a series of the Polaroids with just the two trees?
And more, yes.
Yeah, okay.
They often have a blue cast to them. They're very distinctive.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So we went out into the Peak District to a rather dramatic viewpoint, and it was misty. There'd been rain, and it was just really dramatic, and the Polaroids were, well... I made some pinhole exposures on Pan F, I think. So awesome. That should work really well, because that's quite a contrasty film, really. And the conditions were quite flat, so I reckon that will help increase the separation in the image.
Was that at the steer that you took a picture of? Was that the one you're talking about? What is that thing?
No, that was
a water buffalo. That was, what is that?
A water buffalo. Where do you think we were? India? No, that was day two. We went for a walk to the local park where Ruth lives, and that was a Highland bull or cow or something. I don't know what it was. It had some big horns though. You don't want to get too close to it.
Yeah, that would mean.
So I carried on my pinhole series of animals. So we'll see how that turns out.
Cool.
But Ina, just to talk a little bit about Ina before we wrap up for the evening. Ina, as we had got 3 months off work, and she'd bought herself a VW transporter van, and with her own fair hands, she converted it into a camper.
Cool. Van. I bet that's cool.
And she said she didn't spend a lot of money on it. She had a friend who has a woodworking facility, and he had lots of machines. So she made a decent bed frame with a sprung base, and to add a mattress on there from maybe a fold-up bed or a futon. She had an area where she could cook, a little sink, and she was just geared up for traveling around. So she's now heading around Scotland, and you can follow her on Instagram. She set up a little Instagram page called... Walden on Wheels, WALDEN on Wheels, WHEELS. And Ina was a bit nervous about setting off by herself, and she's I think she was really excited and also very nervous, but she's away, so she's shooting with her Intrepid and some 4x5 expired Polaroid film.
Cool.
And she's just got herself a a Holger wide pinhole, you know?
Yeah.
But she didn't take that with her because she hasn't played with it enough and she didn't want to shoot 10 rolls of film through it.
Yeah.
Without checking first to see that she was actually getting any images.
That's a good policy.
Yeah. But her vision, which is these wide landscapes put together with Polaroid images, she thinks that Holger wide camera, pinhole camera, will just complement the way she sees things.
Yeah, cool.
So we had a great weekend, and I shot a few rolls of film through the 6x12 because, did I mention I don't have a 6x6 camera at the moment?
Neil. Neil gave us a call in actually, he actually thanks you for letting him use your cameras, and I'm going to put that in the show today. So,
yeah, it's okay. Don't worry, Neil. Just take your time, mate.
Hurry up and take your time, Neil.
But Ina and Ruth are both massive fans of John Wilkening.
So, awesome.
I mentioned to them that you were coming on the show, so Ina was super excited about that, and she said she listened to your Creative Bar podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Which is just brilliant. You want to just tell folks a little bit about your Creative Bar podcast, John?
Before you start, how long have you been doing it? I guess that's what you're getting ready to say, I guess, actually. So
as with a lot of things, I tend to be I'm not as consistent as the advice would tell you to do on a podcast. So I've done it for probably now 2 years, but the way it goes is I recorded 8 episodes, then took a big break, then recorded a whole bunch of episodes and took a break. A spits and spurts is probably my current style of how to do it.
It's all right.
Yeah. But I just released episode 49 with Nick Mayo of Nick Exposed.
Awesome.
Yeah, but, I've talked to basically every type of photographer and even some illustrators and painters. The goal was to sort of reproduce that, you know, when you're out with your artist buddies at a bar or a pub, Ranger, and you're two to five drinks down and you're just talking about everything and that sort of laid back approach. And so that's sort of what I wanted to bring to the podcast world. We end up talking a lot. I barely talk gear. It's pretty much all sort of like creativity, which inspiration, sort of how you're working and sort of thinking about stuff like that.
And so, that's kind of mirroring your journey, isn't it? You know, this search for creativity, I read somewhere, you know, your continual drive towards, you know, you picked up a pencil and found you couldn't draw for toffee. But eventually you stumbled upon photography.
Yeah.
It's very clear to me after speaking to you now for this last period of time, that you're on this fantastic journey, John, and it's a wonderful journey, and you think very deeply about your images, which is and the meaning of the search for creativity is a really big thing for you, and I guess your Creative Bar podcast is just taking on that whole idea and developing it, and that's what you love, isn't it? The search for creativity.
Yeah, no, it's something where, you know, unlocking that creativity was such a big momentous shift in sort of me and my life story. And these conversations are basically opening and talking about that sort of stuff with people. And then, you know, hopefully maybe getting people to think about their own work in very different ways. And, you know, and it's something where I've learned so much from listening to podcasts that, you know, I'm basically returning the favor, hopefully, to other photographers.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to look at things a different way. If you don't, you're just going to end up being stifled and stalled. Even if you go back to what you're doing, you still need to look at things differently and try something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Exactly.
Cool. Well, this has been a great show. Great. It's been great talking to you, John.
I think we'll let our listeners decide whether it's been a great show.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
If you could just edit out some of those embarrassing things I said earlier, that would be really good. Okay, you do that for me?
I'll try, please. But I can't guarantee you anything.
Please keep the part where he called my kid a dog.
Oh, my gosh. So, so let's... John, if you want to let everybody know where to go about find you and where they can check you out.
So johnwilkening.com is the website. You can find Creative Bar on pretty much any sort of podcast app service you want. It should be in pretty much all of them. Hopefully the episodes will be a little more consistent, but no promises, but there will be more.
You've just updated your blog, I saw. Your blog is very interesting and full of, I love the way you structure your blog and your thoughts and ideas and quotes. I think that's great.
Thanks. Yeah, every Monday I release something called Monday Morning Dispatches.
Yep, I've just signed up for it.
Thank you. Basically, it's roughly 10 things that sort of caught my eye during the past week. And it could be painters, chefs, photographers, quotes, ideas on productivity to recipes, like basically anything that catches my eye. And so I've done 180 of those.
Wow.
If you're bored and you want to just look for stuff, just go on my website and search Monday Morning Dispatch and you'll have enough links to spend your life with it. but that comes out every Monday. If you want to sign up for that.
I'd totally recommend that. There were some YouTube videos on there of a band playing somewhere. I didn't get to see quite where that was, but...
Yeah, then there's usually a on the blog there'll be a link with a music video or something like that on there. So it's basically a continuation of finding ideas in other places. And then I'm on John Wilkening on pretty much any of the social media channels, from Twitter to Instagram.
Awesome.
And if anyone right now, I'd sort of put it out there on my Twitter. If anyone needs any feedback on a project they're working on or some, you know, whether it's publishing a zine, book, working on a new project, just hit me up and I'll try to help you out.
Cool.
You know, that's I saw that and did a bit of a retweet, John, and that's what I love about this film community. I know it's been said over and over again and people come on podcasts and say how generous and kind and loving the film community is, but it's really true, isn't it? I have to say.
Yeah, in my experience, they've been probably the most open group of individuals. If you ever need a problem, you just, you know, ask around, and if they can't find an answer, they'll find someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Yep. Yep, that's right.
And dear listeners, if you have problems you'd like us to solve for you,
email us.
Email us, yeah. What's the email address, Corey?
Our email address is thelenslesspodcast@yahoo.com.
Because we don't get enough emails, and we'd like some more.
Yeah.
We can solve all problems, medical in nature, spiritual, whatever. Yeah, we're both trained counselors and medical doctors, so whatever your problem is, Corey can solve it for you.
Just let me know.
And where else can folks find the Lensless Podcast info, Corey?
You can find us on the Facebook group, which is the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. Mm-hmm. We're on Twitter as the Lensless Podcast, and
we're not. We're on Twitter as @thelensless. But
I'm sorry, folks. @thelensless. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have. Do we have a Flickr group?
Maybe.
Yeah, we do.
It's growing.
And that's
very interactive.
That's @thelensless too, isn't it? It's not Lensless Podcast.
Well, if you go onto Flickr and Google, go onto Flickr and search for the Lensless podcast, you'll find it.
Gotcha.
And where can we find you, Corey?
Instagram. I'm at Pinhole Cannon, and the show has its own Instagram page, and that's at the Lensless Podcast on Instagram.
Yep.
Andrew, where are you at?
Pretty much all over the internet at Warboys Snapper, WARBOYS. I do have a separate Instagram feed on Instagram, Warboys Snapper _pinholes. So you can find some, which is, funnily enough, just devoted to pinhole photography.
Sweet. And next week, does anybody recognize Lorraine Healy?
Yeah.
She's going to be with us next week.
She is.
She's awesome. Going to be talking with us. So she's going to be our guest next week. So
yeah, we love Lorraine's work.
Yeah. If anybody out there listening has any questions for her, go ahead and send them to us, and we can include them next week, and we can ask her. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. So that's next week's guest. And we're really excited because we like her photography also. So,
and when are we launching our new competition? I know you and I have talked about that, but I can't remember for the life of me when we said.
I think we've decided to let some of the other ones expire. So yeah. No,
there's a few going on at the moment, aren't there? There's a few.
Yeah. It's coming. It's coming. So,
okay.
So everybody, we hope you have a great week. Thanks for hanging out and listening. We really appreciate it. And email us with any questions or comments. And we want to say thanks a lot, John, for wasting some time with us.
Yeah, thank you, John. And
my pleasure.
Can I just give a little cheeky shout out for my friend Pinhole Willie?
Yeah.
You won't find him anywhere on the internet, but he knows who he is.
Mr. Willie.
Pinhole Willie.
That's gotcha. All right, so till next week, everybody have a great week. Thanks.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.